This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. This week, we've got a jam-packed show, and I have a feeling you're really going to enjoy it. Later on, we'll be hearing from Representative Chris Smith of New Jersey, Governor Phil Bryant of Mississippi, and House Majority Whip Steve Scalise. But first, former Arkansas governor, presidential candidate, and longtime popular commentator Mike Huckabee has teamed up with global faith and family television leader Trinity Broadcasting Network. They're going to be doing a new weekly news and talk show premiering this weekend exclusively on TBN. It's called Huckabee, and joining Tony to discuss the show is Governor Mike Huckabee.
Governor, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony. Yeah, we couldn't come up with an original name, so we just decided to call it Huckabee. Figured it would be easier to keep up with it that way. But I tell you, I'm very excited about the launch of this show. It's going to be, I think, different than anything else on television. And Trinity has been just an extraordinary partner to work with on this. And it's kind of a new foray for them into, a different space than they're used to doing. And we are all hopeful that it's going to be well received. I think it's going to be.
Well, it's to that last point, I think it's much different. They've kind of avoided the kind of political conversation in many ways. But your program, when it was on Fox, the weekend show that you did, was the top-rated weekend program. This is obviously something people want.
Well, it is. And for 6.5 years, we had more viewers in that time slot than the other cable news channels combined. And I think it was because the show was wholesome. It had intelligent conversation, and it was not the traditional, what I call political ping-pong, which is something we're going to make sure we do in the show. It's not just somebody from the left and the right screaming at each other with very predictable political talking points that you can predict as soon as they start talking.
Right.
And we're not going to have people talking over each other and yelling and screaming. It's going to be a thoughtful show, but it's also going to be entertaining and fun. And one of the things different about it is that I always recognized that our audience was far more Branson than Brooklyn, that it was really a heartland show for heartland people in the red states and the flyover states. And so we're doing the show and producing it in Nashville, Tennessee. We just built out a brand new, beautiful theater and studio that will be housed. We'll have lots of room for a large studio audience. And it's going to be an extraordinary experience for the people who come to the show. But I think the viewing audience is really going to have fun with it. And they'll be informed, they'll be encouraged, and they're going to be entertained.
And I think you could talk about the pressing issues of today without doing what I call gladiator TV, you know, where you force people into the ring with one another and see who comes out bloodied the most. And I don't think people really – I don't like it. I've turned most of that off. And I've been on – I was on your program a few times when you were at Fox, and it's a conversation. You got an audience that wants to be there. It's engaging. And let me ask you, will there be a little music involved in this one since it's in Nashville?
Well, Tony, being in Nashville, there's going to be a lot of music. That's one of the things that I find most appealing to me, is that rather than just sort of have a song at the end of the show almost as an appendage, which I always wanted to do more music on the Fox show, but they kept telling me, hey, we're a news channel, we have to do more news stuff. Well, we're going to have more fun, do more music, get to know the artist and something about what makes them tick. And frankly, we're also going to get into the issues of the day. In fact, we wanted to get a newsmaker, somebody that is kind of a headliner to open up our very first show. And the very first guest that we will have this weekend is President Trump. So I'd say that's a pretty good start.
So when does it launch?
It'll happen this weekend. It'll air on Saturday and Sunday, 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 Central. And then it will repeat each of those evenings at 8 o'clock Pacific, which would, of course, make it 11 o'clock on the East Coast for the repeat. So no matter where a person lives, they're going to have several opportunities to see the show, both on Saturday, October the 7th, Sunday, October the 8th. And For more information, they can go to tbn.org/Huckabee. They can see a little preview of the show, get more information about getting tickets for the show if they're going to come to Nashville or would like to. And I just feel like that it's going to fill a great void that is right now hard for people to find something on television that is completely wholesome. We're never going to have to ask you to rush your children out of the room because we're getting to edgy and perhaps bordering on vulgar topics. And I truly think people are going to find it, again, an informative show that tells them things in a manner that they can understand and break it down. But this is not a show designed to raise your blood pressure to 300 over 200.
You can find out more about all of the topics we cover here on Washington Watch when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with Representative Chris Smith.
We need you in Washington, D.C. America is built on the courageous spirit of its people, and it is our duty to preserve this great nation by sustaining religious liberty, defending the unborn, and protecting the family. Take a stand for faith, family, and freedom at the Values Voters Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C. Hear from invited and confirmed speakers like President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Michelle Bachmann, Franklin Graham, Dana Loesch, Kevin Sorbo, and many more. Register now at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. Pro-life leaders and GOP lawmakers are celebrating the passage of the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act, which passed in the House of Representatives on Tuesday. Next, it goes to the Senate. The bill would ban late-term abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy, the point at which scientists have determined that unborn babies feel pain. Joining Tony to talk about the legislation is New Jersey Representative Chris Smith.
Congressman Smith, again, it was great to see you last night. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Tony, great to see you last night as well, and thank you for the great work you did at FRC on backing this important human rights legislation to protect babies at 20 weeks. You left no stone unturned, so I'm deeply grateful. I know Trent Franks is the prime author of it, so thank you.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. And I know that you and Trent lead the pro-life caucus, and this has been a longtime passion of yours for your nearly three decades in the Congress. All right. This was significant. This is the third time the House passed this bill. And simply what it does is that after 5 months of pregnancy, it bans abortion. Is that correct?
That is correct. And it does so because we now know beyond any reasonable doubt that babies feel excruciating pain from the abortion procedure, particularly the dismemberment abortion, which literally pulls the child apart. It is outrageous. It is brutal. It is child abuse. And yet it is legal, and it is promoted by many members, minority members of Congress and people in the media. It's extraordinarily disheartening that they could be in favor of such a barbaric procedure, dismemberment.
Well, let me go back to what you just said, excruciating pain. I don't want people to miss that because you chose that word intentionally. It's not just, I mean, obviously it'd be painful to be killed. I mean, that's obvious, yeah, the way they do it. But we know from scientists, medical experts who have testified before Congress that at that point of development, the density of the nerve endings are such that the pain is more than what it would be post birth, once they're born.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Tony. Dr. Anand has written extensively about pain. He does a lot of work in the area of children, critically ill newborns and children. He has pointed out that the density of pain receptors, as you pointed out, per square inch of skin, occurs in utero from 20 to 30 weeks gestation more than at any other time in our lives. So the baby, as he or she is being dismembered, will feel this even more than you or I or a child who has been just born. And we also know, and Dr. Malloy, Colleen Malloy from Division of Neonatology at Northwestern, she deals with a lot of preemies and works in the NICU that help these little babies survive, and they are surviving at 20 weeks. After fertilization. She makes an excellent point, and she did so in testimony before Trent Franks committee, on the Judiciary Committee. She says, in the medical arena, we resuscitate patients at this age, and we can witness their growth at that age. And then she says, I could never imagine subjecting my tiny patients to procedures that involve limb detachment. They know. They're looking at these little kids. They wear diapers that are a little bit bigger than a tea bag. It's incredible how small these children are. We talked about one little baby boy who was at a press conference last week with us, Micah, who survived 20 weeks. And they put an M&M's wrapper next to his tiny little precious baby body, and it was about the same size. But if you tried to hurt him, he would feel it every bit, even more so now, based on the science, than you or I. And he would grimace, he would cry from that kind of abuse if again, you talked about a dismemberment abortion. And it's the culture of denial, again, on the part of the abortion side, to stand up at the podium on the House floor and in front of cameras, of TV cameras, and say children don't feel pain at that point. Well, that's utter nonsense.
Congressman Smith, I thought that was that was the side that embraced science, and we rejected science.
Oh, that's a great point. That's exactly right. We're embracing science, and science is on the side of enfranchising unborn children. You know, I pointed out in my remarks that you know, even Children's Hospital in Philadelphia is working on developing a capability that would mirror the placenta so that we could save even earlier preemies. Because it's really, you know, it's not a measure of the humanity of the unborn child, as it's a measure of how good we are from a science point of view as to when we can save them. So viability, you know, is going down every single year, and now it's at 20 weeks, and it's going to go even further down because we will be able to save these kids.
You can find out more about that pro-life legislation when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we come back, Mississippi Governor Phil Bryant.
We've gone from give me liberty or give me death to take care of me, please. What has happened to the American spirit? Our colleges were once bastions of free speech. Now they're bastions of speech codes. In a talk about his new book, Not a Daycare, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, takes a hard look at what's happening around the country, including the demand for safe spaces and trigger warnings at universities like Yale, Brandeis, and Oberlin. Go to frc.org/speakers to watch.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. There's been a tug of war going on between the state of Mississippi and the U.S. court system over a religious liberty law that passed in that state. Here's FRC President Tony Perkins to introduce this topic.
Last year, the state of Mississippi, in response to the Supreme Court redefining marriage and then people of faith being targeted, Mississippi enacted a very common sense piece of legislation called the Protecting Freedom of Conscience from Government Discrimination Act, HB 1523. It was signed into law by the governor in May of last year, but the next month, the following month, right before it was to go into effect, U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, well, actually it was the lower court stayed it, but the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit rejected a challenge to HB 1523. And what this does is simply provides exemptions for those who have a conscientious objection to being forced to facilitate same-sex marriages and other matters they disagree with. And it allows them to opt out of the process while allowing other government workers or entities to handle such matters. It basically prevents the government, I emphasize the government, from discriminating against people of faith. Well, last Friday, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in a 12-2 vote denied the plaintiff's request for a rehearing based upon lack of standing. Now there's an effort in Mississippi to appeal that to the U.S. Supreme Court, asking for the full court to rehear the case challenging the merits of the Mississippi law. With us now is Mississippi Governor Phil Bryant, who has been leading the charge to protect freedom in the state of Mississippi. Governor, welcome back to Washington.
I just heard you, and I don't think you could describe the bill any clearer. And by the way, thank you for what you do. But what's so amazing about that is we've seen national news, we've seen lawyers, we've seen people who say they are out in defense of certain areas of population, and they can't seem to understand the bill. You gave a very clear definition and description, and I would say 30 or 40 seconds there of exactly what 1523 does. It stops the government from discriminating against people who have deeply held religious views. So conscientious objectors, I compare it to Muhammad Ali in the 1960s when he said, as a Muslim, I can't go and take another life, oh, by the way, unless Elijah Muhammad approves of it. And no less authority than the United States Supreme Court said Muhammad Ali, because of religious freedoms in this nation, has the right to be a conscientious objector and not go to the Vietnam War. So we think that same right should be protecting those that have a business license, that are paying taxes, that may be within a political jurisdiction like a city with a liberal mayor and board of commissioners that might say, if you don't abide by our beliefs, we're going to take your business license away. We're going to fine you. We're going to put you out of business if you don't follow what we believe are the standards for this city, and that would mean we won't even take into consideration your deeply held religious views. So it is to stop government discrimination against people of faith. That's as easy and as I think as fair as I could describe it.
Well, when the news came down from the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, of course, the opponents continue to say it's unconstitutional. But you, on Sunday, you said, from the beginning, the law was democratically enacted and is perfectly constitutional. And I want to emphasize that, for instance, let's say someone had to issue a same-sex marriage license. They had a moral objection to that. It simply allows someone else to do that and not force that individual to do it.
Exactly. So you turn to the clerk next to you or someone working in the office that has that authority, and you say, would you mind doing this? And the law even says you have to accomplish that without delay or interruption of the issuance of the license. Now, I will say, of course, there's going to be another lawsuit on the actual merits of the law, and we will probably have to go through that process. But
yeah,
this was brought before the Mississippi legislature, was passed by a majority of the members of the House and the Mississippi Senate, brought to my desk, and I signed it into law, as I have many other laws that have gone through that same process.
If you want to find out more about Governor Bryant and his efforts to protect religious liberty, just head on over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. When we come back, House Majority Whip Steve Scalise.
In a free country such as ours, it's easy to forget that slavery still exists. Human beings are being trafficked and sold for sex against their will. Human trafficking is a horrifying scourge that continues to haunt America, particularly through the proliferation of illegal online transactions between traffickers and buyers. As part of the FRC Speaker Series, Congresswoman Ann Wagner discusses congressional anti-human trafficking initiatives and how the conservative community can best be engaged in combating this horrific crime. Watch this discussion at frc.org/speakers.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. A little over a week ago, Representative Steve Scalise, the Republican whip in the House who was shot in June at a congressional baseball team practice, returned to Capitol Hill for the first time since being seriously wounded. He joined Tony on Thursday.
Steve, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's great to be back with you.
Well, it's great to hear your voice, and it was good to talk to you the other day. And as I told you, as I text you, I thought you did a great job in your speech last week on the House floor. What was it like to be back after being gone for such a long time?
Wow, it was incredibly special to be back. I was gone for 3.5 months, and being in a hospital for 3.5 months is, it's it's difficult. It was necessary. They, you know, they got me better. They saved my life. I was, you know, near death, but I also started the rehabilitation process of relearning how to walk, and I wanted to make sure that when I returned, I really looked forward to returning to work. I loved doing the job of representing the people of Southeast Louisiana, but I wanted to be able to walk on my own. And when I walked into the House floor on crutches, but walking on my own accord, just to see my colleagues for that first time in 3.5 months, and just such warm applause and seeing a lot of smiling faces that I hadn't seen in a long time. It was just an incredible, memorable experience.
Well, as I said, I watched from Colorado as I was out there last week. But, you know, I can remember you making one of your first speeches on the House floor back in Louisiana, and you've come a long way, man. You do really, really well. And I was amazed. I was sitting there watching. My wife was there as well, and I saw your wife up in the balcony. And I have to tell you, what amazed me most is that you kept your composure the whole time. I don't think I could have done that.
You know, there were a couple of moments where I almost broke down into tears, you know, just so much love and the prayers that I'd gotten. But I was specifically talking about some of the people who helped save my life. And, you know, David Bailey, my security detail officer with Capitol Police, who engaged the shooter, was there. And then he ultimately was one who brought the shooter down. David was shot during that shootout and still kept going after the shooter. And he saved my life, but he also saved everybody else's life who was out on that ball field, because the shooter had an arsenal of weapons to go and kill, and his intention was to kill all of us. And
right.
Dave's a hero. He and I have cried talking together at the hospital a few times, where we, you know, both talked about our experiences. But Brad Wenstrup, my colleague from Ohio, who was also a decorated Army Ranger, he was a combat surgeon. Brad came and applied the tourniquet that saved my life. I would have not made it to the hospital alive. I was bleeding so much and nearly lost all of my blood, and Brad put a tourniquet on. When I mentioned Brad, and I didn't know where he was sitting, and a few of my colleagues pointed to where he was, and he looked at me, and he's tearing up, and he comes over and just gives me this bear hug, and I almost broke down there, because that was a special moment. Again, he's one of the people who saved my life. And I talked about God, and God played an incredible role in performing real miracles, Tony, on that field that day, true miracles that I can point to that you can't explain. Yet many of the things that that happened to save my life, you know, you can truly look at as real miracles on that field.
And you and I have talked about a few of those as we've spoken a few times since the shooting, as you were in rehab and in the hospital. And you've grown much deeper in your faith, you and Jennifer both, as you've walked through this challenging journey.
Yeah, this really can test you, but, you know, as Jennifer said a couple of weeks ago, that which doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And it truly strengthened our bond as a family. But also, you know, I had a strong faith in God already, but it really shows you witness to God. And I wanted to share that with my colleagues, that I can show you real things that happened on that field that day that are not explainable, except for the fact that they were real miracles that happened that kept me alive. And, you know, and I said on the floor, I'm a walking and living example that miracles really do happen. And I think it touched a lot of people that I shared that. And it touched me just to see it up close, to see my faith confirmed, you know, that day and in the weeks and months after.
And is this also kind of maybe a wake-up call that some of the rhetoric in the political realm gets overheated? I mean, we don't know much about this gunman. I mean, we know some, but he was obviously killed in the shootout, so we don't know all of his motives. But we do know some of the places that he was visiting, like the Southern Poverty Law Center. And, you know, I just, in a republic, it only works if we can engage in vigorous, honest debate without fear of violence. And once that begins, we begin to lose our republic.
That's so true, Tony. You know, look, we can have differences. And you come up to Congress, you know, you can say what you want about the institution of Congress, but the House of Representatives is a true reflection of the people of this country. Yes. And when you look at elections, you can see we are a divided nation in a lot of ways, and that's reflected in the House. We have different viewpoints. I passionately believe in conservative principles that made this country great. Not everybody agrees with me. There are people that have polar opposite views, and we debate it out. And yet, you should never make those disagreements personal, and nobody who looks from the outside at Congress should ever think that if they disagree with what's happening, they've got any justification to go in and commit criminal acts. And I think that's where you've seen the line kind of blur with some people. But in this case, clearly he was filled with hate and wanted to kill people based on their political views, and that's just wrong. And at least what I saw, from this evil act, I saw so much good, the goodness of people, thousands of people that reached out. Democrats that I've gotten to be good friends with over the years here in Congress, who I've been on the opposite side of issues with, that came and visited me in the hospital, as so many Republicans did. It was just good to see a true bipartisan feeling of love and support to counter the negative that started all of this.
Yeah, and that's been my experience. You know, when you serve with your colleagues, regardless on what side of the aisle they're on, you can have vigorous debate over the issues, because that's what this is about. It's about arriving at consensus, and you got to be passionate about your ideas. But at the end of the day, they're another human being, they're another American, and we stand arm in arm when it comes to those fundamental American principles.
Well, you said it incredibly well, and the way you carried yourself when you were in the state house. I mean, you were a passionate conservative. You and I were on the same side of a lot of issues, but there were people on the other side. And I think a lot of those people still respect you to this day, because they realize you were sincere, you had real beliefs, and even if they disagreed with you, you've got to respect the differences, and that's what makes our country great, that we actually can disagree and air it out. You know, we have First Amendment rights. We have Second Amendment rights. We need to respect those rights.
Absolutely. Steve, we'll see you next week at the Values Voter Summit. Looking forward to seeing you on the big stage.
I look forward to that, too. So thanks for the invitation, Tony.
If you want to find out more about the Values Voter Summit, which starts in just a few days on the 13th of October, just head on over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkel, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.